Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
magnetic fields quiz. Now, I haven't been podcasting for a little while because I've been working on this research papers to support a demonstration, and there's sort of all the deep aspects of it, and I've managed to stop myself going too deeply in the office of the topic by actually putting the paragraphs together and then basically Excel spreadsheet and then putting it across and then doing it. But so hugging radar, and I've sort of trying to explain what people don't understand, sort of this tangent which just won't get down. And after writing for basically a day of this fairly good script, you know, I'm ground about unpack about how people have got it wrong, and I realised that's the wrong method. I've come up with internet quizzes before, and I've come up with this idea to actually cover basic understanding of magnetic fields, and I've got 11 multiple choice questions, 11 a great number of the number system base 11, nice. Well, that's come down to our cricket teams and our football, Australian football teams are based on 11. But put that aside here, there are 11 questions here, and the trick is that I really don't want people to spend time thinking about it, I just want them to scan to the last answer of it here. So yeah, questions 1's got two alternatives, A or B. Now, I don't want them to. It's the entire methodology of a multiple choice putting on end by actually just making they realise that A is not it or B is it. And similarly, say I've got some 3 multiple choice, mostly 2 choices, the wrong and the right answer. Just make it fairly simple, straightforward. So, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read the multiple choice questions, and you'll know the last alternative that you hear is the correct one. And there's not a lot of information here, so this is again a cognitive summary rather than a multiple choice question. You know, it's a difference going into the story. Let's go through questions 1 to 11, then I'll read the questions again fully so you know. Nothing interests me. Question 1. In science, the term field refers to various alternatives. Question 2. A magnetic field at a point in space requires how many numbers to describe it? Question 3. The magnetic field at a point is best detected by A, whatever it is. Magnetic field lines on Earth mostly, alternatives, magnetism explained by whatever it is. The attractive force of a magnet is greatest where there is greatest, whatever it is. The turning first torque on a compass, magnetic dipole, is greatest for, we've got alternatives. Magnetic field lines trace. In 3D magnetic fields, magnetic field lines for a solid magnet are whatever it is. In lightning, magnetic field lines, whatever it is, solar prominences have the same shape as the sun's magnetic field as. Okay, there's a common misconceptions and sort of tweaking you can go. So for question number 1, in science, the term field refers to a 3D volume of space in which a property can be measured. A property can be measured. Or B, the property that can be measured at points in a 3D space. A property. So it's B. So the magnetic field is a property of something, and it exists in three-dimensional spaces. It's rather than the three-dimensional. It's sort of a slight difference there. So the magnetic field is a property, but it's like the difference between my magnetic fields out there. The other one is, the 3D volume of space is there regardless. It's less precise, that first one. Question two, we'll get a bit more with it. A magnetic field at a point in space requires how many numbers to describe it? One, two, or three? Questions A, B, or C. There's three. So it's the strength and two directions, above the horizon and northeast-west, azimuth and northeast-west, or a strength in the X, Y, and Z ways. Just knowing. A magnetic field at a point is best detected by a compass or a moving coil, a moving coil magnetometer. The latter, compass tells you perhaps a little bit of direction. If it's a great one, it's an inclination compass, so it points in three dimensions. That's definitely the way to go. However, a moving coil magnetometer tells you two things. It tells you the direction by spinning it around. So, if you can spin it, and if you line it up correctly, you get the greatest strength, and it gives you the strength and direction. So it's definitely the latter. Magnetic fields on the lines on Earth mostly travel parallel to the surface, pointed at an angle into the ground. Pointed at an angle into the ground. So many people think because you've got a compass and it points that way, and I've got my compass set such that it appears that it's parallel, you get the feeling that magnetic field lines are parallel. But to people's shock and horror, a lot of magnetic field lines are pointing into the ground. So, if they're pointing into the ground, it's very unlikely that there is a point on the surface of the Earth that it's moving to. So that was a push. Magnetism is explained by A, magnetic materials and electric currents, or B, quantum mechanics and special relativity. And it's the latter, quantum mechanics and special relativity, which actually is sort of the end point for which we have... it doesn't explain it completely, but at least it hooks you on to what it is. The magnetic materials have quantum mechanics operating inside them, and electric currents operate on special relativity. So those two things are closer to the explanation. The early ones are just moving you into the region that the latter can explain. The attractive force of a magnet is greatest where there is greatest magnetic field strength. The greatest rate of change of magnetic field, or magnetic field strength gradient. And of course it's the latter, because you've got a little dipole. Let's see, the attractive force on a magnet. So a magnet is a dipole, it's got a north and a south. So if the magnetic field is completely uniform and intense, there's nothing to say to say the force of attraction on one pole is equaled and cancelled off by the force of repulsion on the other pole. So there's no net force on a magnet, whereas if you've got a gradient, one pole's going to receive more energy, more force, and the other pole will receive less, so it will tend to push it away. So that's a thing that just unpacks people. It's that dividing point for where what they've been taught just falls apart, and they've got sort of two things to do. One is get angry, look for someone to blame, or they can actually go in and fix what they think. The turning force, torque on a compass, a magnetic dipole, is greatest for A, greatest field strength, B, greatest angle made with the direction, C, A and B, and the size and strength of the compass. And it's all those factors come together to give you turning force. The strength of the field, the orientation of the compass with respect to the field, so if it's at 90 degrees, If the compass is a big one, that's got small magnets on either end, those are going to put more turning force to it. And if there are bigger magnets on the end of the compass, that will also increase the turning force, but all going in. So that's just a housekeeping. I would expect people, even with their school education, to get that one right. Magnetic Field Alliance Trace. The force on a North Magnetic Monopole sequentially translated small increments of distance in the direction of the force. Or B, the correct answer, the pattern of tiny compasses on a north pole of each compass, with the north pole of each compass touching the south pole of the next. Where you have it is that B is what magnetic field lines do trace. So if you've got iron filings, that's essentially what the iron filings are doing. They're a sequence of small magnets doing that. So the field lines are, to an extent that, there is actually no magnetic monopole. And if you do have that theory, if you do have that, you get infinite energy because your field lines go in a loop, and the magnetic force is always on that, and it just goes around ad infinitum. So that it seems plausible, but it is crazy. 9. We're getting towards the end here. In a 3D magnetic field. In 3D magnetic fields, magnetic field lines for a solid monopole begin and end at magnetic monopoles, or B, loop back on themselves, travelling through the magnet, I should add. They definitely don't begin at the north pole, or so the south pole, and begin at the north pole and end at the south pole. That's not it. They actually do travel all the way through, and the real problem is that once you've established a rule mechanism for it, it's a lot of work to re-engineer it. So there's a sort of a propensity for people to say, "Look, I've taught you about electric field lines. Magnetic field lines are just as good." Well, they're not just as good; they're more artistic than, they're less mathematically rigorous than electric field lines. And so, rather than do that, we sort of tweak the science, tweak reality to fit what we're doing. So I'm going to have to come back. Now, in lightning, magnetic field lines run along the lightning bolt, or B, wrap around the bolt. Now, you get a feeling that magnetic field lines, it seems to be, what are they doing? Well, they are wrapping around the bolt, and by wrapping around the bolt, they sweep the bolt together and hold it together. So it's actually like the lightning is sheathed in magnetic field, but the magnetic field doesn't travel along it. It's just one of those things that basically misconception that people have magnetic field lines travel along lightning bolt. Here's a variation of it, which is just embarrassing to hear grown scientists talk about this. It's just, especially if you're a visitor, you come in and you listen to a talk, you can't put up your hand and say, the tendency is for people to gang up on you. You've got to be very diplomatic. But let's talk about number 11. In solar promises, solar promises have the same shape as the sun's magnetic field as A, plasmas trapped on the field lines, or B, if it moves out of shape and makes an angle with the field line, the current is pushed back to no angle. It's slightly different. It's not that they're it's the latter. It's not that they're pulled into the field lines. They're actually pushed into the field lines. It's a subtle difference. It's not so there's a field line and they're attracted to it. No, if they want to move away from the field line, they get pushed back into it. So it's sort of, it would it feels as though they've been being pushed in, but they've been, it's when they move out of the field line they're pushed, and when they're in it there's no force on them. That's sort of, if there was a force on, the force would increase as you get closer towards it. And so this is a general misconception. So people think, oh, look, the sun's magnetic field lines are being channeled in. So it's unlike iron filings, where the magnetic field gets condensed into the so it's not like the sun and the solar prominence, it's not like sprinkling iron filings on the sun. When you sprinkle iron filings, those little magnets line up. In a sun, there's not many little magnets, north-south magnets, going along the place that the magnetic field's wrapping around. If the magnetic field is free to orient itself, but what happens is that if it tends to go at an angle, it feels a push back towards going parallel. So that's a subtle thing, but it's all of these relate to sort of half intuition and half sort of sloppy science teaching to go ahead. So you can see where I'm at the moment in terms of I have to now, having really radar hugged on this form, this radar hugging means that I have to airlift in a strategic object into this paper and re-engineer and rewrite, which is just a pretty epic thing to get down. And I'll be interested to see whether the Microsoft speech handles this particular one, whether it's good. And I've had the innovation of saying a LACO test. LACO. I've something called a LACO test, which is the last answer is the correct one. So it's not a teaching one, it's just a mental checklist that if you don't agree with it, you better get reading this article. You don't want people to, it's not a teaching object. It's pretty amazing that we're putting it there. So I don't know how to actually describe it, but yeah, again, that's knowledge and teaching do it. So I'll get this up on the net. That took 18 minutes to work through that, so you can imagine just the amount of sheer bullshit. It's hard to say. Like, if you're working within a paradigm, it's easy because you're going with a flow of shit, so you only have to take a tiny little step, publish, and move on with the general flow. If you're outside, there's just so much work to get through it. Okay, well, I'll stop this and get this out.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.